So let me start off again. My name is Erwin King, K-I-N-G. I'm from the Computer Science and Engineering Department. And today I'm going to talk to you about social computing. I know that there are many topics being thrown at you so far, ranging from chemistry, biology, all the way to, you know, the other extreme. And this is good, because this is a general education course. And today I'm going to talk about a little bit about what is the frontier of computer science. Well, what has really been happening in the last few years, okay? And this, in fact, is really interesting. It's probably very intimately related to what you do. And hopefully you will find something that is very useful today and take it with you into your department and may be able to inspire and challenge other classmates or even your department to consider some of the things that we've been talking about here. Okay? So, let's begin. I know that recently we have a financial situation in Hong Kong. And the joke is that a lot of people are being fired. Okay, because you know what's happening in the world, and many people are actually without a job. And here's a comment. It says this: how to use Web 2.0 in the enterprise. And the guy is saying, haven't you read my blog post? I have fired you yesterday. Okay. This really tells a very interesting scenario in our everyday life these days, okay? 5 years ago, you probably will not see this kind of comment. But now, you are not surprised to see something like this. 20 years ago, I remember when I first came to Hong Kong. I came to Hong Kong about 16 years ago. You know, telephone was a big thing. You remember those clunky telephones about this big, you know, and with the antenna sticking out? And right now, you know, you could pull out a phone like this and talk, right? At the beginning, it was very, you know, 25 years ago, we didn't even have phones, mobile phones. And for this generation of students, you probably can never imagine a time without the phone. And same thing with this comic right here. It says something about the way that we communicate with two people, that we communicate to one another, and how we use that information and the method about communication. Okay? So, this is about communicating to your employees, and I hope that that's not the way that we communicate. But it just so happened that many, many people actually do communicate this way. I'm going to talk about something also interesting to you. It is about money. Can somebody tell me who were the three top billionaires in 2007? Who was number one? 2007, 2 years ago. Who was number one? I don't look at your notes. I know you have notes there. That's cheap. Okay, look at me when I'm talking. Oh, you only look at notes when you need to take down something. Look at me, 2007, who was the billionaire? Bill Gates, number one. Who's number two? Come on, the other guy who's really going to stock and other things. Who was it? What is his name? Business people, you should know. What is it?
Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett, number two. I'm sure not many people would know who number three is. Anybody? Number three. Who was the third richest person in the world? Okay, you can take a look at notes. It's Carlos Slim. Okay. And he is basically a person from Mexico, and he is involved in many, many different ventures. Okay? Guess what happened in 2008? Anybody? You probably could find out 2008, they did the shuffle. What happened was that Bill Gates lost some stocks, Microsoft, evaluated, so that Warren Buffett actually came up be number one. What happened in 2009? Anybody? It was just released about 2-3 weeks ago. Who was number one again? Bill Gates became number one because the other two actually lost tremendous amount of money, half of their worth. Some of them even more than half their worth, right? So what does that tell you? That tells you that money is not everything, okay? So don't rely so much on money. But guess what happened in 2008? Anybody actually know who this person is? Mark Zuckerberg. Anybody heard of him? He made a list to the billionaire list in Forbes. Why did he make it to the billionaire list? Some people acquire their wealth from inheritance. They inherit it from their parents. Some of them actually acquire their wealth by doing business in real estate, in stock, in many things. And other people actually just doing business in technology. He is one of them. And guess what he did? Anyone? Don't look at notes. If you know it, just let me know. But don't look at notes. Anyone knows who he is? No idea, right? No idea? No? No? No. Mark Zuckerberg is actually, he was only about 24. Okay? He was one of the youngest billionaires. I'll tell you how he made his billion. He is actually the founder of a web company called Facebook. You guys know Facebook? How many of you actually use Facebook? Oh, good. See? This is intimately related to you. But you have to have no idea who this person is, okay? He actually started Facebook in 2004, February, in a garage, basically. He started coding. He was actually attending Harvard. He was coding, and he was doing all the, was it Harvard or Yale? I forgot. Anyway, one of the Ivy League schools. And he was coding on this and asked people to share, okay, to actually get online and doing all that, okay? And you thought that Google was the time of high tech is over. But it wasn't, because this was back in 2004, that's not that long ago, okay? And last year, or 2 years ago, Microsoft, or 2008, okay, last year, Microsoft decided to purchase like 10% of the stock for, I don't know, $400 million US dollars. So if you evaluate the company, 10%, 400, right? So they evaluate 100% would have been 4 billion or more than that, okay? So he owns maybe 30% of the stock, so immediately he was a billionaire. Immediately in 2008. Okay? Now that is amazing. Right? Overnight success, if you want to really call it. And all he did was what? Wrote some programs. YouTube guy, the same thing. YouTube? Yeah, we could get a couple of computer scientist students to write a video server right now in 2 weeks. That does more or less the same thing as YouTube, even Flickr. Okay? There's still a lot of things that is happening in the computer science. 23. He's 24 this year. About the same age as you guys, right? Isn't it? Okay? So what I'm trying to say is this. Social networking, things like Facebook, MySpace, and many other things are becoming common. Are becoming like the commodity. It's the way that we communicate now without even thinking about it. Just like we use a phone right now. You don't think about it, but you use it. Today, what we're going to talk about is about social computing. Everything about this new phenomenon about social computing. If you were to look at the global traffic ranking, right, I might be talking hot air. I might be talking nonsense. But if you were to actually look at the global traffic, internet traffic ranking as of November 2008, these stats cannot lie. These stats actually demonstrate the usage on the internet. If you look at it, the red part actually demonstrates the use of social networking sites, such as MySpace, YouTube, Facebook, Wikipedia, and so on and so forth. You look at China. China, QQ is actually very, very popular besides Baidu. And in fact, other things like 163, Yahoo, and Google, they are sections inside that are associated with social computing, chatting, interacting, blogging, website building, forum, okay, and all these things. Okay? And obviously, globally, you can see that YouTube, Facebook, MySpace, Wikipedia, and bloggers are more and more popular. So what I'm trying to say is this. Sometimes, you know, things just go under radar without you noticing what is happening, and the world is actually changing. Okay? Now, what I'm trying to say is that 10 years ago, 5 years ago, if you don't know about social computing, that's okay. But today, you almost will miss it if you don't, you're not aware of what social computing is. Okay? So, you see this internet reach, and you can see, this is very quite interesting, that, let me see, the black one is actually the line for YouTube, okay? And the red one is actually Google, and the blue one is actually Yahoo. And what you can see is that from 2005 to 2008, the beginning of 2008, Yahoo's actually traffic has decreased, while Google has gained a little bit, it fluctuates, okay? But look at the phenomenal growth of YouTube. YouTube is growing very, very much. Every month they're picking up new people and so on and so forth, okay? Let's look at another one. If you see this a little bit more clearly for Wikipedia, you could also see a tremendous gain. Now, can you guys tell me what this little fluctuation means? A little up and down? Why is there a little up and down?
Day and night.
What? Day and night. Day and night. And actually, they're more of a cycle. 7 days, right? Weekdays. What do you think the most people will access Wikipedia? Weekday or weekends? What do you think? Weekdays, right? Weekdays, they probably will access a lot of these things. Most likely, Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday is okay. Thursday and Friday, probably they just think about something else. Weekends, now you play. Okay? So you have little blips, a little wavy thing, sine wave, okay? And that really matches this. And sometimes you can see this interesting data. If you look at Google's query log, you also see fluctuations, like last year, you will see 4-year fluctuation. A lot of people query Olympics, okay, right before the Olympics, or during or after. There are a lot of query logs about Olympics. And summertime, you know, watermelon is definitely a high, very high query item. Okay, so you can actually see that these behavior reflect what is happening on the internet. And there's no lie that social computing is really very, very popular. And you see the page view, and this is really startling, is that Yahoo actually dropping, and other things, YouTube is really, really picking up. Page view, okay? Earlier was traffic. So this is talking about traffic, right? If I download one big file, that counts as one. But page view, you have one page view, two page view, three page view, and so on and so forth. So this is another way of looking at things, very similar things, but you don't count. You know, YouTube, obviously, if you look at YouTube, because they download so much data, right? So the data volume could be very high, but maybe not that much page view. But this is more realistic of what is happening. So if you look at the page view, there are actually many pages being viewed in YouTube. So it's not just about downloading a huge file and having the traffic, having that volume. Okay, so it's both. The traffic and the volume and the page view is actually quite high. Okay, so here are some other ones. So you can take a look at it, okay? And so what happened is this. Web 2.0, now I haven't defined Web 2.0 yet, but let's not worry about it. Let's keep it there for a little bit, and then I'll come back to that. The growth of what you see this phenomena, you could actually trace it back, okay, 2 years growth. From April to 2 years April, it's about 650%. Okay, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
Okay. You think that after Google and Yahoo, there's nothing else, but there's something right now. Okay. Okay. So where are we going today? Today is about you. It's about us. It's about people. It's about social computing. A couple of years ago, Time, now every year, Time makes the Person of the Year award, right? A couple of years ago was some Nobel Prize winner, right? Al Gore won once for combating global temperature, warming effect, right? And a couple of years ago, Time actually selected the Person of the Year. It's not actually a person, but it's you. You actually are the Person of the Year for Times. Why is that? Because they actually see the importance of social computing that is happening right now. Okay? So what we're going to do today, we're going to take a look at the Web 2.0, or the 2.0 revolution or evolution. Okay? We're going to look at the social triple X. Triple X just means that we're going to look at different social platforms that actually are happening right now that you are probably know them, but you're unaware that they actually fall in the category of what we call social computing. And we're going to talk about them in this course. Okay? And then you would have what is cooking. So we're going to talk about what is happening in education, for example. And then I'm going to conclude this particular section. Okay? So let's talk about Web 2.0 and social computing. Anybody know what a Web 2.0 is? Anybody heard of Web 2.0? No? Web 2.0 versus Web 1.0. What's Web 1.0?
Actually, nobody defined Web 1.0.
Web 2.0, obviously this is no 1.0. Web 2.0 is not a standard. It's not a specification. It's not a program, but it's a cloud of concept that we put together. I'm going to show you and explain what a Web 2.0 is before we go on. So the manifesto of Web 2.0 consists of this. Somebody actually had a forum back in 2004, and they first coined the term Web 2.0, trying to distinguish what is happening right now these days about the web versus what happened 10 years ago on the web. Okay, I actually saw the web grew all this year. Okay, I remember when I was a PhD student back at USC, University of Southern California, back in 1992, or 1991 at that time. You know, I was in the lab doing computers, doing some work on a computer called Sun Microsystem. They still exist, but they may be purchased by IBM very soon. But nonetheless, at that time, it was a very popular workstation. I was working on there, doing my email thing, and FTP, and at that time, that's it. Okay, we play some games here and there, that's about it. And then what happened is this guy came into the lab and go, "Hey, Erwin, you gotta come here and check out this program." And that program turned out to be, what, anybody? Anybody know that first, what was the first web browser? Netscape, right?
Yeah, it was Netscape, and I think it's an NTSA Netscape or something like that. Anyway, he said, "Come over here and check this out. Here's a browser." I said, "What's a browser?" "Well, the browser, you could actually go search people. You know, people actually put information on the web, and as long as you have a browser, you're able to access all these things and so on and so forth." And from that time, I was amazed, and I saw the potential of the web already. Okay. Can you imagine back in 1993, there was actually not such a thing called the web? And today, can you tell me, can you exist without a web? Okay? Just imagine this 20 years, short span, 20 years. In fact, the Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the first, wrote the first protocol about 1989. And 1991 was the first it came out, the web browser and all that. So he had an idea to say, how do we share information on we have so many computers connected together. How do we share information consistently across? Okay? So that's how he wrote up, hey, we could get a program that could, if we have a browser, we could do this and so on and so forth. He wrote it. It was the first one. Okay?
So, remember this. You want to do something great, be the first one to do it. Don't be the second one. Because nobody remembers the second person. Only the first person, right?
So, the manifesto of Web 2.0 is this. Web 2.0 is the network as platform.
And I'm going to come back to explain this. Spanning all connected devices, Web 2.0 applications are those that make the most of the intrinsic advantages of that platform, delivering software as a continually updated services or service that gets better the more people use it. Consuming and remixing data from multiple sources, including individual users, while providing their own data and services in a form that allows remixing by others, creating network effects through an architecture of participation, and going beyond the page metaphor of Web 1.0 to deliver rich user experiences. Okay? For your final,
you got to remember this, and you got to write it out. No, I'm only kidding. You don't have to remember this, okay?
You don't have to remember this, so I'm going to explain what this means. First of all, Web 2.0 is a platform. It's a network as a platform. Not just as a way to say, well, network is dirty. No. Actually, you build things on top of the platform. Okay? Second, connected devices. At that time, we only connected by computers.
But actually, it's not really only computers. We're talking about phones. We're talking about netbooks. We're talking about devices. We're talking about many, many things, right?
Right now, did you realize the RFID, radio frequency ID, that they could actually sew it into each piece of garment that will contain an IP address
that could interact with you, right? As you walk through certain things, they actually will detect and know what you're wearing or how many pieces of things you're wearing and so on and so forth. That's scary, right? Because all these devices can be connected.
And what we're saying is that Web 2.0 is about connecting devices and share information and participate, if you talk about architecture of participation, and this is a very key point in the social media, is how you participate. Okay? And remix. What do you mean by remix? We're going to show you an example later.
Right now, the web actually is a great platform. It's a platform now that you can pull different information sources, combine them, organize them, and present them in a new way. Very much like what I'm doing. I'm actually pulling all these information from the web, remix them, and present them. Just like the Web 2.0 is doing.
Okay? And lastly, is this one, rich user experiences. Web 1.0, it was text-based. Right now, we have text-based, image-based,
video-based, chat-based. You can talk, you can do all sorts of things, right, through the web. And that's what we call the user, rich user experience. Okay?
Okay. So, here again, some of the terms that we actually used to describe Web 2.0. I know it's maybe a little hard to see. Anyway, I'm going to be able, I could put this out on the web so you'll be able to download this. Check out my website and you'll see. Mobility, remixability, standardization, economy, design, usability, participation, AJAX is the technology. There are a lot of technology, but there's not one specific standard. Web 2.0 is basically a whole lot of technology that actually trying to get people connected and participate, okay, and share information. If you think about that, that's what social computing is all about. Okay? Okay, so Web 2.0 defined as this. It's the business revolution in the computer industry caused by the move to the internet as a platform. in an attempt to understand the rules for success on what on that new platform. Web 2.0 is a knowledge-oriented environment where human interactions generate content that is published, managed, and used through network applications in a service-oriented architecture. Your Facebook, for example, is a great example of that. Why is it? Facebook is actually has a lot of unique interface. Okay, before the you didn't realize this, but all the page, the whole page, need to be updated at once. Okay, before, but now they use AJAX so that parts of the page can be updated without affecting the whole page. So this way, you know, when someone write it to your wall, okay, you would actually know immediately. Other people will be also know immediately, but only that section is affected, but not all everything else. What does that do? That cuts down the traffic that is required to always reload every page. So there are technologies been happening behind the scenes of Web 2.0. And also Facebook allows you to upload images, video, and all that. It gives you a rich user experience, just like social computing and Web 2.0 wants you to see. Okay? Okay, so there's four levels of Web 2.0. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. The level zero, okay?
The level zero is basically you don't need the web to exist. There's applications that you don't need the totally the web to exist. For example, it operates very well offline as well as online.
For example, MapQuest, Local, and Google Maps, and things like that.
Oh, when I say Google Maps, actually, I don't mean Google Maps. I mean there's some map applications, right, that you actually don't need to be online to access those. Okay, and that's one thing.
Level one is operate offline and gain features online. For example, iTunes, right?
How many of you use iTunes? Nobody? Nobody uses iTunes? Nobody? What do you guys use? Winamp? Okay. iTunes actually is fantastic, by the way. It's very, very good. Because you have a lot of podcasting on the iTunes. You could download a lot of free materials, learning English, Spanish, French, and so on and so forth on iTunes for free. Okay. So I use iTunes a lot. If you don't get online, you're able to use iTunes, just play music and so on and so forth. But if you get online, you can actually see what other people's playlists. You could actually share your playlists. You actually do a lot more things if you're online. Okay?
Level two would be operate offline and gain advantage online. Say, for example, you could operate YouTube, Flickr, and so on and so forth, offline. Okay, you could organize your picture and so on and so forth. But when you get online, then you can share your pictures, you rate your pictures, you have other advantages that when you do when you get online. And level three, obviously, is the highest level that only exists for example, on the internet. Okay, these things are eBay. Right, you can't do eBay without a network connection, right? You cannot bid, you cannot do all these things. So eBay, Wikipedia doesn't exist. I mean, the only version that exists is Encyclopedia. That's 26 volume like this that you have to carry a printed thing or a CD, right? But Wikipedia is something that exists only on the internet and it doesn't exist anywhere else. Okay, so again, these are some of the levels. Okay, and I hope that by describing this to you, you begin to understand what a Web 2.0 really is. Okay, so here you see that all these companies, actually technology company, and each one of these is one company. So you can see that a lot of companies actually is using Web 2.0. Okay, and I'm going to just I'm going to just go through this. This might be a little too slow. Let me see. Okay. Yeah. Is this the last one? But I want to share with you is this, okay? Web is not as just a medium to carry information, but it's a platform for you to build application on top.
It is not just read-only, but it's read-write now. You could actually interact with the web. Before, you just read, but now it's read-write.
Static versus dynamic, and bottom-up
versus top-down. Right now, you are actually the producer, not the teacher. You know, we could obviously help, but you actually are the producer. Why? Because you're constantly putting pictures up there, video up there, blogging, and doing all these things. Guess what? You're no longer just a consumer. You have become a producer of multimedia content, multimedia material.
Okay? And lastly, obviously, is that, it's people to people, not people to machine. It's publish and subscribe versus search and browse. Okay? And data, before we have a lot of data information, but right now we don't talk about that. We talk about the value. You know, the value of Facebook. What is the value in Facebook? Why do you actually put up all these things? Why do you do it? Well, because you can get connected with people, right? Before, you know, your parents or whatever say, get off the computer. You know, you're only interacting with machines. You're not human anymore.
Go talk to people. You know, before people think that because we operate so much on the machine, on the computer, we become not very personable. But strangely enough, Facebook and other social networking stuff, or social computing stuff, actually bring people closer together. Not further apart, but closer together.
And that's what we want to see here. Okay? So a lot of people see that as an evolution, but I see that as a revolution. I see it as a revolution. I'm going to give you a couple words for you to think through and take home. The first word is called globalization. Globalization
is a globalization through localization. And what that means is that I want you to think globally and act locally.
This is exactly, you want to be successful in this new social computing age. You need to do that.
You have to understand that every action that you do actually will affect global. It's like, you know, the warming effect of the earth, the greenhouse effect, and so on and so forth.
If we all contribute to lessen that, you know, you will have a global effect.
Same way as social computing. You might think that what you're doing is just a very little thing in the whole complex of things. But believe me, they are actually looking at you to make sure that you are continuing to do something with the social computing and so on and so forth.
So think globally and act locally. The second thing is this, replication. Replication is a word that combines the web and application. And you see that it's coming more and more happening. Right? Very soon, guess what? How many of you are actually using Vista on PC?
Nobody? How many is using Windows? What's the last window?
XP. How many are using XP? Good. So why are you not using Vista? Well, why are you not using the next generation of Windows? It's very obvious, right? Why? More so. Google is actually taking a big chunk out of that. Not only you can open up Excel files, not only you can open up top, Google actually helps you to search your desktop and all that stuff. Many of the applications that is before was on the desktop has moved to what? To the web. Okay? That's what the webification means. It's turning application to something that can be used on the web.
That's replication. Web and application put together, replication. Okay? A lot of these things are actually happening. So you can see that we're moving more and more away from the desktop.
In fact, my iPhone is probably my second most used device, other than obviously my desktop. Because many of the things I can actually do on the iPhone quicker
and more and more so these days. Okay?
I'm moving things from the desktop.
I could read email, I could do all those things from this. Why? Because they're moving a lot of application onto the web that I could access using these devices like this. Okay?
Okay. So, I want you to remember these three C's. Okay? Three C's about social computing. First is connectivity. Second is collaboration. And third, community.
And some people say, you know, there are three important ingredients in social computing. One is called the network. Network is right. Network is about connectivity. It's how you actually connect together. And I'm not just talking about telephone lines. I'm not talking about wireless. I'm talking about wireless lines.
I'm talking about computer. I'm talking about your social network that you form. Okay, how you connect to one another, right?
Second thing is collaboration. That's content. If I collaborate with you doing something, I produce content. I produce some kind of synergy. I produce things. And some people say that's content. So some people say the three important ingredients will be network and the content, and the third one is people. Okay, you can think about that way. I just thought about three C's. C, C, C. Okay, first is connectivity. Second is collaboration, and the third is community. Okay, the collaboration meaning that we work together. Okay, and the third C is community, is that we form communities. You collaborate with different people. You form different communities. You might have a community for your hobby that is different from your community of, say, church organization. That is different from a school organization. That is different from your relatives. And that's another community that you can talk about. Okay? So all these things actually would come up differently.
And these are the three important C's that you need to remember. Okay? So, what is the social web?
Well, the social web is this. Here is a chart. It's kind of hard to see. Okay? And I'll give you some example of what a social web is before we talk about social computing. The social web actually, is actually the social web network or social network for Academy Award winners. Okay, Academy Award. You guys know Oscar, right? Here in Asia, they have the Jing Ma Jiang, the Golden Horse Award. In the U.S., they have the Oscar, the Academy Award for all the films. The best films in there. This is actually the social network. You can see that the movies. I think these are actually the movies. Can I see this? I don't have this. The middles are the movies. These are actually actors and actresses and so on and so forth. Okay. And these are the network that they have. Here we have the next network. Okay. Yeah, some different type of social network. Here's a social network for what? Anybody want to guess?
Well, you probably could guess because Jesus is right in the middle, right? So this is actually a social network. If you go through the Bible, you kind of read through his social network, his disciples and people he met and so on and so forth. This is a network that you would actually produce, okay, for social computing, okay?
And this is a network that is time dependent, that go over a period of time, and that says about a particular person's interest, research interest, over time. So you can see that back in 1989 to 94, this 5 years, this person was mainly working on two subjects. And then the last 5 years, he moved to broaden up the subject as his citation and all that. That's a network too. Your paper, okay, what we publish as paper, that is a social network. Why? Because the paper tells you who you collaborate with, either your student or your associate or your colleagues, right? And that, it becomes a social network that you can actually connect and understand what is going on. Okay, so what is next? Here is another social network. And this is very interesting. This is a criminal case that this guy was charged of bribing and government officials. So this social network actually indicates his connection with other politicians and who is what and so on and so forth. So you can actually use social network analysis in this context. What about this one? Okay? Now you don't see this one. This one's a little harder to see. But I want to tell you, this actually is a social network they actually found after 9/11, September 11. This is actually the terrorist social network. So they're able to actually map, you know, who is what, who actually drove what plane, and how did they meet, and when did they meet, how did they know one another, and so on and so forth. Guys, this is not science fiction anymore. There's some movie that you go to see, they're able to track, you know, giving a name here and giving another name here, they're able to establish the linkage. We have the technology to do that precisely. And this is actually one of the results, looking at the terrorists on September 11th. Okay? And that's a social network too. And now you're beginning to see the importance of understanding the social connection, not just as a interesting fact, but their significant implication. Because if I were to know one of these, I will be able to actually find out what other people are doing and maybe possibly prevent something from happening. Right? So this is their great importance or applications for those social science people too. Okay. I'll give you another example of the importance of this. Here is an organization chart of a company. And this company, the boss, his name is Manuel. Okay? And he has three, basically, mid-level managers. Charles, Donna, and Stuart. And then Stuart would have three subordinates, employees working under him. And he will be Bob, Fred, and Sharon, okay? And so on and so forth. Now, you can see that this is an organization chart. And you might say, wow, this is wonderful. This is fantastic. I understand the hierarchical order relationship of this, okay? But guess what? If you do a little bit more digging, if you do a little bit more analyzing, you will see that Manuel still the boss in the middle. But guess from this chart, I'll ask you, who is actually a quite important person that was not shown in the organization chart? Who would that be? Well, I think that there are three mid-level managers. There are Charles, Donna, and Stuart. So take those three out. They obviously are important. But which another person is important? Who? Nancy. And who is Nancy? She's the secretary, it turns out. Because if you analyze the traffic that goes through, then the decision-making process and all that, she actually became much more important person in the organization than even the other three other managers. So what does that mean? That means if you want to get to Manuel, you might need to get on Nancy's better side before you talk to Manuel. It appears that if Nancy supports you, your whatever thing maybe get support too. So what I'm trying to say is this. Social networking or social network actually has a lot of hidden layers that is not obvious. Organization chart is very obvious. You know, VC, pro VC, deans, department heads, and so on and so forth. But is there another organization out there? And I'm showing you that there are other ways to analyze your social network will give rise to different things. Okay? Okay. So let's talk a little bit about social platforms. So you're beginning to understand what a social computing or social network is. Let's talk about
various platforms that do social interaction or social networks and social computing could exist. Okay? What are they?
Let's take a look at this. First one, obviously, is social networking. Social networking, as you can see, that's my Facebook site.
Facebook, MySpace, are what we call a social networking site that all these things could exist, right? I could actually invite you to become my friend. Once you become my friend, I could basically tell you what I'm doing right now, okay, what I like to eat, what I don't like to eat, what books I'm reading, what music I hate, and all that stuff. Have you ever thought about this? Okay, you're probably a shy person. You probably don't like to talk to people. But you're available. You're offering all these information to many of your friends. In fact, what we found out is very interesting is that through Facebook, you actually find out more about your friends than talking with them sometimes. Right? You go, what? This person likes this particular movie? I never thought about that. But maybe it's true. Right? You find out actually more about a person reading his or her Facebook than, you know, maybe even talking to him. Think about that. Okay? So second thing is called social sharing. How many of you are actually using Twitter? No? You know what a Twitter is? What's a Twitter? Okay. Twitter is exactly what she said, but I'm going to just expand that, elaborate that a little bit. If you never have a Twitter, if you have Facebook has a thing called, I think it's what, Irwin King is, and then you fill in the blank. Is that right? In Facebook? You know, Irwin is doing whatever, okay? That's basically a Twitter. But the Twitter, you can actually follow a person or follow a topic, okay? And Twitter basically is a very simple way for people to update what he or she is doing right at that instant. Okay? You might go, why is that so important? Why is this crazy thing? You know, why would people want to tell people what I'm doing right now? But believe me, Twitter, in fact, is the fastest growing social networking site right now. People love to tell other people what they're doing without making a huge announcement. But they would be like typing, I'm on the phone talking to this technical support guy. This guy is a jerk. Okay? That's it. Or, by golly, I'm having a great meal in this particular restaurant. I'm typing it in. And so on and so forth. That's all they do. That's all they do. But guess what? Because Twitter will be able to process, manipulate all those things, in fact, it will give you the most updated information at any time for any topic. So you type in a topic you want to know, guess what? The Twitter will boom. Or immediately will find you, update you in real time what is going on. A couple months ago, you remember there was an airplane that kind of took off from New York, and as he kind of took off, what happened to the airplane was that a whole flock of birds came in, and it got sucked into the engine, okay? And then the pilot had to make an emergency landing, and instead of going back to the airport, he had to land where? In the middle of the river. Remember that? Okay? Guess who was the first? You know, how was the news traveled? In fact, it was a guy who was doing Twitter on the iPhone. He was the first guy who took a picture, posted it into a Twitter application to say, hey guys, we landed in the Hudson River. Okay? And that news actually was broadcast or propagated out immediately. Okay? So what I'm trying to say is this. You know, you don't have to look at ABC News, NBC News, or Pearl, or Star TV News, and all that. The news is actually old news. You had to wait until 7:30, it's old news. You want real news, you read Twitter. Twitter will tell you exactly what's happening right now.
Because this is with what we call a citizen reporting. This is really happening right now. Okay? If there's something that, you know, this is why
a lot of campus actually use iPhone, because they want you to tell you what exactly is happening immediately. If they're, you know, in the U.S., remember there was shooting. They want to tell you what's happening right now. Okay?
So Twitter is that kind of application. It's called social sharing. Telling people what you're doing. Blogging is another one, right? How many of you blog? Nobody? Okay. A lot of people like to tell people what they're doing or what their daily experience, their journal. Okay? And that's what is good. Okay. Social search is another thing. Is you know, right now Google, right? Google, when you type in, you know, the best restaurants in Hong Kong, guess what? It's going to return you so many things that you have no idea whether they are true or not true. Right? Okay. How about, what if you or friends actually have a list of the best or most favorite restaurants they have, and you just search on those things? Wouldn't that be wonderful? That would be even better, right? Why would I want to ask Google where the best restaurant is if I knew my friend would know the answer right away? Because I know my friends have a similar taste, similar price range, and so on and so forth. And it doesn't make sense to go to Google, right? Sometimes. It may make sense to do what we call a social search among your social network, okay? And so on and so forth.
Social mashup, or social news, is actually what we said earlier. Mashup, this one, the Foxy Tune,
is actually a website that is created by what? By assembling sources from various web services and put them together.
So you have a section on lyrics.
Guess what? That lyrics is actually taken from Yahoo Lyrics.
There's a section about YouTube on this particular band. Guess what? It's taken from YouTube. There is a section by various things, right?
News about this artist that is taken from somewhere.
So in this particular page right here, I'm talking about a particular band, a musical band, okay?
I might be thinking about 10 different sources from Yahoo, from Google, from someone's blog site, from lyrics and guitar tabs and things like that, and assemble them together. And that's what we're doing right now, guys. Okay? That's what we're doing right now.
Okay. Social bookmarking. Delicious.
Delicious. It is not a site for recipe. Okay?
Delicious is a site for what? Social bookmarking. You know what a social bookmarking is?
Do you know what a social bookmarking is? You have no idea?
Now, do you see actually when you
go onto some web page, right?
You will see actually the delicious little icon right there. And you click on it, you can tag this particular web URL link to be whatever you want. You could say, oh, say for example, you know,
I will appreciate very much if you go to my webpage and click on the delicious and say, you know, this is a great professor site. Okay? I'm serious. Why? Because when you do these social bookmarking and tagging, right, you actually get put it on to a website called Delicious. So if you want to look for good professors in CUHK, guess what? My name will pop up. Okay?
And that's the power, is that we're leveraging social people, your knowledge. Every single one of you has the knowledge to do something. And this one just so happens it's called social bookmarking.
So you bookmark this particular site in a common place.
And that common place will be able to answer questions like, you know, what is the most popular video sites, or what's the most popular restaurant in Hong Kong? Because a lot of people actually bookmark this particular website to say, this is a good restaurant, but this is a lousy restaurant. I had a good experience, I have a lousy experience. If there are enough people say this is a good experience, well, this become a good restaurant, right? Okay?
So social bookmarking is a very, very interesting and important area. Social media, you talk about YouTube, you talk about Flickr. These are media sites where you can upload, share, manipulate, present all these multimedia information. Right? Right?
Okay, there's another thing. How many of you actually know what Second Life is? Anybody know what Second Life is? You never seen Second Life? You never seen
anything at all? Second Life is an online virtual world. It's like a game environment. You can interact with real people through this animated characters. You could go to places where you could never gone before. You could actually have meetings in the virtual space. Last year, in fact, I heard from Microsoft in a Microsoft event that a lady became the first millionaire by selling virtual real estate inside Second Life. She had to hire 20 to 30 people to just keep track of what is going on in the Second Life program, okay? And she actually hit that $1 million mark because the virtual money inside that can be converted to real money. Okay? Did you realize that? The world is going so fast. Okay? This is it. We are actually thinking by using this to teach you guys. We don't need to be here. We can do this online. We can do this virtually. I can take you to places where I cannot take you before. You going to go to Greece? Sorry, but I could do that inside Second Life. Take you to Greece, understand this amphitheater, understand, and go to Turkey, you know, go see the Colosseum. Go to Rome to see the Colosseum, and they explain to you what is going on. And this is what the Second Life is all about. Okay? Social media. Social knowledge sharing. Okay? You guys don't know what a social knowledge sharing is. Wikipedia. You use it, but you may not be able to share. But I'm sure that you have so many things that you can share. Right? You go there, CUHK site, guess what? Who actually put that up? Trust me, it's not the Wikipedia people who put it up. It's somebody from CUHK actually type up that information. Okay? And imagine what is going on. People actually are typing up all this information. Okay? Social marketing. This is a new term that is being used. And why is being used? Because they think before the marketing, for those business people, right, marketing is actually you need a whole department dedicated to marketing. There are many different ways to market. You know, they want to be able to target somebody specifically, and Google is very successful in doing that. And here in social marketing, what we want to do is this. Assuming that you have a pool of people around the right side, you have basically, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on and so forth. And the sphere, that shows you the sphere of influence. Number one, for example, you could be a professor, maybe a senior professor, a chair professor, or the head of the department. You will have a bigger sphere or circle of influence. Whereas maybe, other professors will have lesser and so on and so forth. And once you understand not only their relationship and their circle of influence, then you will be able to specifically target certain things to do marketing with them. For example, the viral marketing, that model that we want to use in viral marketing is such that we believe the spread of the word of mouth, for example, saying that this product is good or this product is bad, is very similar to a disease, how the disease is spread. So you catch a cold, right, and then you give it that cold to someone else, is very much like the way that you actually say, oh, this product is great, go buy it, this product. So that's what I call viral marketing. And in this scheme of things, it is important to find out who are the brokers. Who is the most influential person? Because you know why? If you have only X amount of dollars to do marketing, right? Your choice will be to spend it with 5 most influential people versus 5,000 insignificant people. Which one would you spend on? Most likely, that 5 most influential people. And how do you find out those most influential people? Social computing. We have ways to find those people out. Okay? The golden rules in this Web 2.0 age are these. Okay? First, give away valuable things.
free. Don't charge them.
Look at Google. How many things does Google charge you? Zero. Gmail is free, right? Scholar is free. What else is free? Map is free. What else is free? Practically everything Google has is free. Only thing they charge you is what? Practically nothing. Okay? And why is Google so successful? Because they don't charge you. How do they earn their money? Not from charging you, from charging the advertiser. Okay?
Look at it. First is give away valuable product or services. Second is provide for effortless transfer to others. Right?
Did you know that I used to use my email, and right now I just use Gmail. I think Gmail is much easier. And it could stay with me for all my lifetime. And I could do that 24/7. I could go anywhere. I would still be able to do this. And I forward everything to Gmail. Now I can search. I can do all those things, right?
Much quicker, much easier.
But you never thought about that. I mean, who is actually supporting them?
Okay? Scale easily from small to very large. You think that Google is serving you because you go, oh, there's only one account.
That's not so. Google handles millions, hundreds of millions of accounts every day. So you want to be able to scale individually as well as for huge social groups, okay,
as Google is doing. Exploit common motivation and behaviors. Utilize existing communication networks. You don't want to create another one. Google is easy. Uses a simple browser.
Any browser will work. I read my Gmail, right? No fancy stuff. But guess what? It works. You could use your, Outlook. How many of you use Outlook? Microsoft Outlook. Nobody? Who uses Gmail? Yeah, so you know why? Outlook has lots of features, right? But guess what? You don't use them. So why do you want to use those Outlook? Gmail is easier, it's simpler, and it's much quicker to do a lot of things, right?
So utilize the existing and take advantage of other resources, okay? So social management. Oh, I talked about this already, so I won't talk about this. Okay, who are the key person? Who are underutilized? What's the knowledge, usage, and sharing pattern inside existing existing social environment? Innovation emerges from interaction. Okay, very important. Okay. Are you kidding me? I only got 20 more minutes left? There's not enough time. Oh no. I might need another course, another class to finish everything. Okay, I'll try in 20 minutes, okay? Bear with me. You know, have you guys seen this when you're actually doing registration of any web application?
You've probably seen this, right?
You have, right? And what does that do?
What does that ask you to do? It asks you to do what? Type in what?
Those things, right?
So what would you type in?
Discharge.
States, Carolina. Is that right? Because you're intelligent.
I'm serious. Because you're intelligent, you can type this thing in. If this one is presented to a machine, the machine will have a very difficult time to do this. Correct? Yeah? Okay.
And that's how they tell that you are not a machine, that you are actually a human being.
Why? Because many people actually want to use a machine to generate lots and lots of these fictitious or fake registration so that they can use these to send out email, to do spamming and all that. This particular program actually prevents you from doing that because it will try to distinguish you, okay, from a machine. You're going to have a human being from a machine. Now, I'm going to show you something that is really neat that has happened in the last 2-3 years, okay? You could do this thing very simply, okay? Let me throw in another thing in there, flavor, okay? Here is the old text, very old text. Somebody wrote it hundreds of years ago, old text, okay? And what I want to do is scan this text in, and one of the things I want to do is make sure that I could translate, I could recognize the text, and get that soft copy out. Okay? Look at this now, guys. Instead of this thing on the top, I cut a piece of that from that text, and I replace it. Instead of Carolina, I put this right here. Okay? Instead of Carolina, I replace this right here. Okay? What did I just do? Well, obviously, you know, I replaced a piece of text, I put it right there, and I still ask the people to type in. Okay? And guess what? This little tiny change is a stroke of genius. Why is that? Well, if you're a machine, you will not be able to type this correctly and not correctly. So that's okay. If I were to type this correctly, this charge, what is the likelihood that this one will be also correct? What's the likelihood? Is it high or low? If I type in the first one correctly, is the likelihood that the second one will be correct? Yes or no? Most likely is yes. Right? If I ask this for 100 different people, like for example, the next person wants to register, I change to this charge to another one, but I still use this. Okay, I still use this. So the other person will type in this correctly and type in this. Okay? Guess what? If I have 100 tries, 99 times, it gives me the same word right here. What is my conclusion? This will be that word. Right? Is that correct? Is that correct? So what did I just do? Guys, I just created the first human optical character reader. That is accurate. Think about this. There are some tasks that the humans can perform that a machine can never perform. I'll give you another one later. But look at this. By simply doing this, I segment each of the words on the right side and put it right there. In essence, I could translate the whole book without hiring one person. Just by people registering this thing. This is what we call social computing or human computation. I'll give you another example. This example is really cool. Have you seen this game before? Image labeler. You can find this image labeler on Google. Okay? You can go look for this Google image labeler. And it's a game. And it's a game that you play with two people. You as the one person. And the other person is someone on the web that you have no idea who this person is. Okay? So you're playing with an anonymous person to prevent cheating for security reasons. Okay? So what this is happening is this. The game is very simple, but it's fun. It presents you with an image. Your job is to type in or describe that image in front of you as quickly, as accurately as you can. The way that you score a point is that you and your anonymous partner types in the exact same word. Okay? So think about this. I'm in front of the computer. My partner and I are being presented with the same image. And I'm trying to describe this. So describe with me, for me, what is this image? Describe. Give me some words. Now. Yeah, describe this image right here. What is it? Lake? What else? Hills, lake, what else? What? Mountains, what else? Sky, trees, you get the ideas, right? So you type the thing in. As you're typing in, guess what? If you and your partner describe the same thing,
okay, you score a point.
If you don't, you don't score a point.
Okay? Simple, right? Guess what? People actually spend 14 hours playing this every day. Can you imagine that?
But for them, it's fun. You know why? Because they score. They can score. They can bring their friend to them and play. Okay? But do you know what you're doing? Do you know what you're doing? Do you know what you're doing here?
You're actually working for Google. Google will pay you a big salary for you to actually do this, but you're doing it for free. Because later on, if I want to find an image that contains hill, mountains, and all that, guess what do they look for?
Right here. You basically have become their image pattern recognizer. You have become a tagging machine for Google without really knowing it by playing games. Isn't that wonderful? That's what social computation is all about. Okay? So it has several components. Let me say this again. First, you can see that how many labels your partner is typing. The partner has typed 10 labels. You type none. Why? I was trying to capture the string, so I wasn't playing. So obviously my partner actually has typed in 10 labels. There's some off. Oh, these are the my label. Obviously you can see I didn't type in anything. You could also see some of these, what we call the off limits. That means that Google knows that these are the most common words. So the game actually gets progressively harder and harder to play because you cannot type these words and get points now. Sky, water, blue, lake, and mountain. So earlier, hills is fine. If someone typing cloud is fine. Trees, that will be okay. If the other guy also typing trees, right? It would be great if you could type it, if you know exactly, say this is lake so-and-so, and the other person really knows it too, you score big points, okay? Okay? And then there's another factor right here is that you get score. And that's very important. If you don't get score, nobody will want to play this game. Because there is a personal best score, there's today's high score, there's this week's high score, there's this month's high score, there's a global high score, and everybody would love to have their name on those scoreboards. So people play this. Crazy, right? You do this for free. And lastly, you have time. Okay? Okay. So, guess what? There are actually a couple games, what we call a game with a purpose. And what is a game with a purpose? This is a social computing games. Okay? The first one is image search by aesthetic value. Okay, you rank the image. Two people rank the image. Is this image a beautiful image, or ugly image, or is it a neutral image? Okay, what? So they ask you some questions. If you both answer similarly, then we say that this is probably so. If both of you agree that this is not a very beautiful picture, then maybe it's not a beautiful picture. Maybe they ask you a question, is this a outdoor shot, like a scenery shot? If we both agree, then this is scenery shots, right? Okay, so you can ask all this question. Babel is translate foreign language into English. As people translate, you could rank or judge whether this translation is good or bad or okay. And two people again agree, anonymous user agree, then you have a high likelihood that this is also okay. In tune, okay, tag songs with description. I give you a song. Can you tell me whether this is a hip hop, this is classical, this is rock and roll, this is, you know, rap, this is what type of song is this? You could actually ask this. As you can see, all these things are really games that the human are able to do that a computer cannot do. Okay? And that's what the latest thing. Microsoft actually has a site for this, and you can convert points into money if you want to do that. Okay? Okay, only have about 5 minutes to talk about social computing, which is really bad, but I just want to just go ahead. Social relationships are important. On the left side, these are groups, okay, relationships and
and cohorts, communities, partners, groups, and so on and so forth. And there you have all the value that contains in the group: social roles, reputation, ownership, accountability, knowledge, and so on and so forth. In the middle will be some of the what we call the computing data structures. Okay? So basically what I'm saying is this. We're combining all the social network here, network services, wiki, blog, email, and some of the computational techniques here, and then we put them together. So social computing is about collective intelligence. It's about leveraging the social network to produce a collective intelligence that can do something. Just very much like that social gaming is. Okay? And I want to show you just this picture. And this picture is a good summary of what a social computing or social network is. You can see that fish, that bigger fish, is actually represented by many, many little fish. If we all work in a group, we all are having the same goal, we might be able to take up big fish like that. Okay? Okay, so the issues are, in social computing, theories. Okay, how we describe social networks? How do we model social networks? You know, some people are actually from the social science department. And for that, you guys are actually, I'll tell you this, the social network actually comes from social science. You remember there was a famous quotation that we are actually a six-degree separation, right? Remember that? And that was an experiment that was done many years ago. And the experiment was very simple. Envelope was given to one person, and with the another person's name and I think occupation, okay, in a totally different town. And the goal is for you to send it to the next person that you think is most likely know this person, and that game just continued. Not a game, but that process continued. And they found that on the average, you go from point A to point B. Now, point A and point B, they don't necessarily know one another. But it takes about six hops to go from point A to point B. And that's what the term 6 degrees of separation. That means that from any person to any other person in the world, there are about six people that we are apart, we're separated. Okay? And that's what we call the social network, social computing, is that how do we actually take advantage of these kind of networks for information retrieval to and other things. Now, the issues are theory and modeling. Second thing is that, as I said before, when we want to do social search, how do you rank documents when you have partial or incomplete knowledge? Because I could tell you, oh, so-and-so is my friend, but that doesn't mean so-and-so is not my friend. I just not going to tell you everything, right? And so-and-so could be my friend, but 2 weeks from now, this person may not be my friend anymore, and I might have more new friends coming in. So this thing is constantly changing, and how do we actually deal with partial and incomplete knowledge? Scalability. How do you actually make this thing not only work for a very small number of people, but work for Google when you have millions or hundreds of millions of people? And security and privacy is a big issue, because right now, a lot of people don't want to actually tell you who my friends are, what product I buy, and what I do on the internet, and so on and so forth, because of the fear of people encroaching on your privacy, okay, and security, because people stalk you, and so on and so forth. And lastly, the monetization. Anybody know what that word is, monetization? What does that word sound like? Monetization. What does that sound like? Money. Money. How do you make money? Okay? By doing the social network. How do you actually define every click, by the way? You didn't realize it. Every click actually is money to Google. Did you realize that? Google actually get paid if the ads that they present on the web get clicked. Each click is a few cents. You might say, a few cents?
yeah, a few cents. But if there are billions of people using it, everybody giving me a few cents, that's a big business right there. Okay? So monetization, how do you actually charge people? How do you make sure that, don't worry about this one, because it's talking about machine learning. I'm going to skip. Okay, so how could social computing work in the education setting? Okay, I'm going to take a few things to talk about this. And in fact, media sharing on the left side is what the general media sharing, if you go back to my earlier notes, okay, media sharing about that. On the right side is what we could use for education purpose. And these are actually sites, okay, websites that you can actually get online and see what they do. For example, on the left side is this called Zentation. It's almost like a presentation. You can share video and PowerPoint and so on and so forth. Whereas NoteCentric is a website that you can share specific university notes, class notes, video, and so on and so forth. Okay, so this is more general, this is more specific. The use of social computing in education and in general. Okay, and similar thing is media manipulation. How can you actually manipulate? Then you have Thumbstacks here, you have Google Little Rip right here. Okay, conversation arena, chat. You can use it for educational purpose. Okay, and online games, virtual world. And I say about this Second Life, go check it out. I wouldn't say, I hope that you don't get addicted to it, but go check it out. It's just for educational purpose, okay? Don't get addicted to it. You could get addicted to it. Look at the scenery, right? Romance here. You could be professional meeting there. You could actually take a vacation there, and you could do all sorts of things, you know, going to places where you've never been before. Take it out. Take a look at it. Okay? And look at the Second Life. It's unbelievable how you generate all this traffic in a very short amount of time. Social networking, LearnHub, for example, LearnHub. Teachers create learning communities and so on and so forth. Blogging, nature to do that. Okay? The risk of blogging is this. The services tailored to or targeted to younger generation, because younger generation is much easier to accept or receive new technology. Okay, old folks, they don't want to change. You give them an iPhone, they don't know what to do with it. Okay, young people, okay, they dig it, they do use it, they do all the same. However, on the other hand, they don't know the security risk that is involved by giving up voluntarily your information. For example, your address, your phone book, your email, and your photo, and so on and so forth. Because bad people can use those things for their advantage, right? So be careful about blogging. Posting personal information, don't do that unless, again, it is a very close community. Don't do that as a public thing. It won't help you. Harassment and bullying happens, okay? People know that. You're a Manchester United fan, and I'm not, so I'm going to harass you. I'm going to bully you. I'm going to tell you these things, and so on and so forth. Okay? So be careful about what you do and what you don't do on the web, because it's risky at times. That may hurt you. Okay, so wikis. Here's, again, general and specific. And a blog visitor wiki, don't worry about that. Social bookmarking. A site you like, right here, okay. Bibsonomy is a bibliography taxonomy thing, okay. You must be seeing something like this on the top corner. So if you go to my website, okay, that delicious tag is on the left, lower left corner. So if you want to tag and you have a delicious account, you could do that to my website. You know, the best teachers, the best professor at CUHK. That would be great. No. Anyway, you could save, you could share, you could find, evaluate, update, and contribute, and so on and so forth. Okay? Recommender system, this is very interesting.
this particular site. I know that CU HK is not very good at it because they, you know, when you fill in the survey, right, you never know what happened.
Right. You fill in the survey. What happened? Nothing.
You don't know what the rating you get. Who is a good teacher? Who is not a good teacher? And so on and so forth. But Rate My Teachers is a website that is dedicated to recommending teachers in a university. And you actually, the students are the ones actually rate the teachers. Okay? And this is what we call a social computing too. This is a recommender system. Collaborative editing. You want to work on a project. Three people working on a paper together. You write the introduction. You write this. You do the experiment. You do the bibliography. Four, five people could actually collaborate at the same time. And there are tools to help you to do that right now. Syndication, getting the podcasting stuff, Stanford iTunes on you. There are many classrooms, lectures are being delivered on iTunes. Okay. Evolution of learning and training. This is my last part. It's going over. You know, it's very different from the face-to-face learning that we have. We have first distant learning. I could send you material over the email that you could learn off-site that I don't see you to face-to-face. Before this, actually, many of things, instruction are face-to-face. You come to classroom, I tell you, you listen, that's it, okay? Distant learning, you learn on your own for material. E-learning, you learn things on electronically, online. And right now is M-learning, mobile learning, you learn it on the go using mobile devices. So the way we learn is actually contact learning, face-to-face, e-learning, paper-based learning, and so on and so forth. As you go up, as you go down, it's more flexible learning, okay? And as you go up, contact learning, face-to-face, is a different type of learning. Okay, I'm gonna skip this. So what is M-learning, if you want to? Here's the paradigm difference between the new learning paradigm and the mobile technology. You can see that it's ubiquitous, it is durable, it is mobile awareness, networked, personalized services, and so on and so forth, okay? And what is M-learning? It refers to your mobile learning and through the social network too. Mobile implies movement and mobility and learning on the go, okay? And make sure that you know this because I'm gonna ask a few questions from here. Enhanced learning success is having this kind of mobile devices. You can access information anywhere, anytime. You're not limited to the classroom. I could take you outside and learn in the field, okay? Just-in-time learning, interact with one another. You could call one another. You could send SMS messages to one another and so on and so forth. That the learning has become much more distributed. It's not one-to-many, but it's actually many-to-many. You guys learn by yourself and so on and so forth. Here are the ways. Here are some of the things. And here are some of the devices that you could see that we actually do learning with, right? Phones, PDA, netbook, even watches or Kindle right there, and notebook, and so on and so forth, okay? Here's an example of mobile learning. If you are a doctor, a medical doctor, one of the things you have to learn is anatomy. It's about humans, anatomy, parts in the physical body. And you can see that on that side, there is a skull, and it will tell you what parts, and it's color, it's color-coded. You could actually zoom in and zoom out very simply, and you could tell what are actually these kind of MRI diagram is, and so on and so forth. So all the course material can be actually put onto a thing this big for you to learn. So learning is really not sitting inside a classroom anymore, okay? It's outdoor, it's anywhere. Okay, so MIT actually has this mobile project, and it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's 7 components of it. It basically has shuttle schedule, event calendar, the campus map, the people's directory,
and the course information and the emergency information and I think this is another event, a particular event things, okay? These applications are all running mobile and they're updated constantly, okay, for you to learn. Okay, let me just say a little bit more about the limitation of mLearning. They're small screen size, limited storage, it requires regular charging, and lack of a common platform, can be stolen very easily, and it's probably not as robust as the desktop. And people tend to change this every 6 months, as I know many of you do. The security and privacy, once you lose this, you know, you might lose a lot of information much easier. So, and lastly, limited bandwidth. As we receive bandwidth, this is very small, and sometimes difficult to upgrade. Okay? There's some of the difficulty facing that, but there are also things that we could do better. Okay? Let me see now. So teaching versus learning, I think that again, I think the teacher is really kind of getting outdated. You guys learn much more from one another, okay, than from us from time to time. And we don't want to put you in a walled garden like this. We want you to actually have an open arena that you should be able to learn very, very differently. And we want to actually emphasize everything on the right part from now on. I'm sorry. Maybe it's called a digital networking. We want actually to make sure that you are actually using social network and do the digital native. You are actually digital native. Did you know that? You guys were born with the digital stuff. Revolution already in sight. Whereas when I was born, there were many things didn't exist. But now you are actually a digital native, whereas I'm a digital immigrant. Okay? So, with this, economists actually recently did a survey, and they surveyed, you know, what is the most useful technologies that is on the horizon. And you can see that many of these things actually indicated that online courses, social network, text messaging, and blogs and wikis, they're all having a very high adaptation rate. That means that in the next few years, you're going to see more and more of these social computing things that will be coming up, okay? And I want to also say this, that the new challenges is to maintain the quality and the reliability of information, because nothing on the web, okay, not everything on the web is truth. And a lot of people take that as truth. You know, you could find it on the web, then it must be truthful. And that is not so. How do you maintain the quality and reliability? How do you be responsible for the security and privacy issues? There are also ethical questions about cyberbullying and other things. And obviously for us, teachers like us, we also are fearful because we don't know these terms. We don't know what a social networking is. We don't know how to use wikis or blogs or all these new technologies as a teacher. So you actually have to understand us from our perspective. It's hard for us to change. I'm obviously running on the front line, but not every teacher is actually doing that, okay? So anyway, I'm going to conclude. I conclude is this: social computing is a paradigm shift, okay? And there are a lot of great opportunities that you could actually do this in the new search direction. And for learning, I would say that there will be free learning information. There's just too much free information source, but you have to be very clear about what you're learning in social computing. There are new variety of sources. You got to make sure they are quality, okay? With new learning, learner empowerment and networks, you got to make sure that you actually need to choose wisely who will provide your educational goals, okay? Who will lead you to the educational goals that you want to achieve. And
and really support from what we call informal learning. Okay? Because with a phone, you guys are actually learning all the time. It's not just inside class, and we realize that too. Lastly, new participation in the learning process, digital native, you guys are expected to be participating, okay, when you're learning. This is not very instructional in the sense that I tell you things. I thank you for sitting here for 2 hours, but I know that is not learning take place. Take place when you interact with me, okay, when we're actually dealing with things, when you're actually going there and look for information and things like that. But anyway, I hope that you enjoyed it today, and I hope that you have fun. These are some of the topics that I think that is coming out in the future, and so I basically conclude with that theme. Any questions for this topic of social computing?
Okay, so are you guys having fun? Did you have a good time? Some feedback? I see some smiles. I see people just woke up and they're saying. Any feedback? Any comments? No? Nothing? No question. Everything is clear. You know, I don't understand this. They asked me to give you guys 15 questions, 14 questions, 14 months for choices, 11 truth and false questions. Okay? So make sure you study my notes well. They're all taken from the notes. Okay? Make sure you do that. Okay? Is there anything else? Nothing else? Thank you so much. I'll see you guys. I don't know when I'll see you, but I hope to see you sometime. See you guys.